Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. The S&P 500 was up last week. This was the first time that occurred in 5 weeks, and this happened during a week of an FOMC meeting, an important NVIDIA developer conference, more economic data, and of course, more speculation about tariffs. So a lot happening in the markets at the moment. Joining us here on this Monday morning, glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, I know you're traveling today, so you're joining us here on the phone, though nice to be on with you. Thank you for checking in with our audience and do look forward to our conversation today.
Yes, good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. We broke our in-office or in-room streak, but that will resume again next week, and we'll go for a longer run next time.
Definitely. Looking forward to resuming our conversations here in New York in the studio. So, all right, a lot to cover today, Jason. So let's begin with that FOMC meeting, which occurred last Tuesday into Wednesday. We did hear from Chairman Powell with his press conference on Wednesday afternoon. I'm curious, what did you take away from the meeting outcome and the press conference?
Well, there were no rate cuts, as well expected, but there were some changes in forecast and some of the language they used. Under QT, the quantitative tightening. So I'll go through that, then sort of give the interpretation of what all it means. In terms of the economic projections, they updated that by downgrading their growth forecast for 2025 by 40 basis points. They increased their inflation forecast for the year. So inflation will end the year higher than they initially anticipated by about 30 basis points. So directionally lower growth or inflation, that is sort of stagflationary. And the downgrade for growth was a little bit more notable than the upgrade for inflation. The dot plots, so the projection of where the Fed funds rate will end of the year, that didn't change. The median forecaster or medium FOMC participant still anticipates two cuts this year. But the skew is clearly towards either zero or one cut. There's a total of 8 committee members who are basically saying like one or zero. So that's relatively hawkish. On the other side, relatively dovish versus expectations was that they did adjust their cap on how many treasury bonds can roll off their balance sheet. Right now it's $25 billion. They're going to change that to only $5 billion, which is close to basically saying they're going to stop running off treasuries and therefore shrinking their balance sheet. You know, this happened, I'd say about a meeting earlier than expected. So that was some of the details. I think a couple of interesting things to note is in the forecasts for inflation, well, it's higher this year. The inflation forecast for the end of 2026 and 27, so December of both years, that basically didn't change. So what that implies is that even though they are baking in higher inflation due to tariffs, they assume essentially it's going to wash out very quickly. And during the press conference, Jay Powell did basically say that the inflation forecasts incorporate the tariff effect, and that he did use the word transitory to describe the tariff inflation. We know how the word transitory kind of turned out almost 4 years ago, so it's a little bit interesting that he chose that word, but it's consistent with how the Fed has been thinking about these things. And ultimately, this inflation rises, but ultimately this whole tariff story is more of a growth shock, and later on down the line, that'll be more of an impact for growth. In the FOMC statement, they did change the language to go from like sort of two set of risks to inflation and growth, to now they're just uncertainty about the economic outlook has increased. And all this reflects the fact that at the moment, everything is sort of somewhat beholden on a policy front, or what comes out of the Trump administration on fiscal policy and more particularly on tariffs. So the Fed is very much kind of in wait-and-see mode. It also means from a market's perspective, to some extent, the Fed put or the Powell put is really only activated after we see what happened with fiscal policy and therefore with the Trump put. So if it turns out that tariffs aren't so bad and the economy isn't slow, the Fed may not feel compelled to cut rates very quickly given inflation going up. But if growth slows, then I think they'll move relatively quickly to want to cut rates to support the labor market, even if inflation is still considerably above the target, which is why ultimately our view is unchanged. We still expect the Fed to cut twice this year in June and September. But look, the uncertainty around that is quite high. This could change very quickly depending on what sort of policy announcements we get from the Trump administration. So the takeaway was kind of more the same view, but the sort of the Fed acknowledging that there's a lot of uncertainty. They kind of codified what the market was sort of anticipating, And now we're all sort of in wait and see mode for what comes out of on tariffs and other policies from the Trump administration.
So, Jason, with that degree of uncertainty in mind, I know as we've been speaking about over the past few weeks, growth concerns continue to be front and center for investors. What's the latest read on the economy based on the economic data we've received over the past week?
Well, the sentiment indicators, you know, continue to sort of show, you know, weakness, and that's really where the biggest concern and the flashing sort of bright lights for growth concerns are in the soft sentiment data. Hard data that's more activity-based, like it's actual consumption, labor market data, continues to suggest that economic conditions, you know, overall are remain relatively solid. I think it's interesting if you look at, you know, different economic surprise indices and how the data is coming relative to expectations. And it was getting sort of worse and worse. It was kind of disappointing expectations. In the past couple of weeks, it's actually been surprising to the upside a little bit. And in particular, the hard data has been doing it even more so to the point where it's actually kind of clearly now kind of surprising positive to the upside. Another measure to look at is the Atlanta Fed has a GDP1 or GDP Now tracking estimate for Q1. This got a lot of attention because it dropped significantly and like into negative territory after some data for January came out. All a lot of it related to, you know, imports, particularly imports of gold. So it's somewhat distorted. But what's happened is that forecast for Q1 or the tracking estimate for Q1 has been trending a little bit higher in the past couple of weeks. You know, it's still negative, but if you think of once you take out that level effect that's being distorted by imports and gold, then it's actually suggesting that the growth picture, instead of getting worse, it's kind of stabilizing and getting a little bit better. And you know, we saw that with retail sales, the control group retail sales that kind of strips up the more volatile pieces was above expectations. Industrial production was sort of above expectations. So all told, you know, growth we expect will sort of moderate this year from last year. And there's certainly still some, you know, considerable sort of downside risks. But this fear of recession and kind of a rapid slowdown, it's certainly not imminent or readily apparent in the data, you know, right now. And we probably won't get a lot of clarity on that this week because the major economic data to come out are on Friday, which include the PCE inflation that the Fed focuses on. And given that the CPI, PPI data that already came out, it shouldn't be sort of too surprising. So I think to me, the more important piece of that data set will be the personal consumption expenditures, which is a broader reading of consumer spending than just the retail sales, because I mean, we'll include services, we'll include kind of a broader measure. If that sort of shows some bounce back after a little bit of weakness in January, then again, we'll sort of reaffirm the overall growth story that the U.S. economy is still on relatively solid footing, you know, even if it is moderated a little bit from last year. So that's kind of the latest, but it is a fluid situation and certainly can reflect shifts in policy that are forthcoming.
Now, Jason, if we look ahead to next week on April 2nd, there's a lot of anticipation over this. President Trump is scheduled to release details of the reciprocal tariffs. What do we know as of today about these tariffs and what is CIO's base case?
Well, it's interesting that, you know, like I think on Friday, you know, President Trump sort of tweeted out that, you know, April 2nd will be Liberation Day. You know, we'll finally sort of adjust these tariffs to kind of get in line and with what other countries are doing. What's also interesting, in the past 24 hours, there's been a Bloomberg story, then another one, a Wall Street Journal story. You're seeing the same thing, that, you know, officials in the administration are indicating that the fears in the market of like really high tariffs kind of across the board, that's kind of overdone. It's likely to be, you know, targeted more towards the 15% of countries that have the bulk of the trade deficit with the U.S. So it's not, you know, it's being kind of targeted with those countries that the administration sort of uses being high trade deficits with the U.S. or surpluses, but also, you know, tariffs that are higher, so targeting those countries. It seems likely that they'll have tariffs that'll be like a uniform tariff rate across all imports from that country, and the tariff rate will, you know, vary country by country. There won't be, or at least at this point in time, limited sector tariffs. So instead of having, say, a tariff on you know, Japan that's 5% or Canada that's 10% and Germany that's 15%, you know, it might be like that, as opposed to all imports of cars will have a 10% tariff. So it seems like they're going in a direction more of country specific. It also does seem like it's once this gets into place, then that can open up scope for negotiations between the U.S. and the various countries, and depending on what they're willing to do in terms of bringing tariffs down or reducing or eliminating other non-tariff trade barriers. So you can see the futures markets and equity markets this morning sort of responding positively to that. Again, viewing that it's moving further away from the more risk case scenarios. We did update recently our probabilities of different tariff scenarios. Our base case still remains what we classify as aggressive tariffs, mainly targeted on China and Europe, and we say that's about a 50% chance. But there's also a 35% chance of highly aggressive tariffs where the U.S. imposes, about a 60% tariff rate on China and 20-30% on the Eurozone, and the effective tariff rate increases by about 15 percentage points, and these tariffs stay in place, kind of all throughout the year. That's, as of the reports over the weekend, that's looking less likely. What I would caution is that we've heard sort of reports along these lines for the past 2 months, and then President Trump or someone else from the administration comes out and refutes these reports. So until we actually see the details come out on April 2nd, I think we should be a little bit cautious in saying, the worst-case scenarios are avoided, because things could certainly change, very quickly. If other countries hear this, they might also then be less willing to negotiate. So again, until we see that, I think it's everything sort of on the table. But it does seem like the administration is going down a path that is a little bit, not as bad as investors perhaps were fearing in terms of worst case scenarios for tariffs at this point in time.
So with that, Chase, and as far as how markets, investors may be interpreting that, as I alluded to a bit earlier, thinking back to last week, financial markets appear to stabilize a bit. What do you read into that? May that be a sign that the correction is over?
Well, I think about what sort of drove the correction. It was clearly recalibrating by investors their views on the likelihood of tariffs and the likelihood of growth slowing significantly. And that was, exacerbated by comments from, Trump and senior policy officials saying that there could be a period of adjustment, transition, detox, a little bit of pain. So the market's going to pull back. I think some position adjustments, further help that. And keep in mind, there was also narratives and stories and developments around the world that were also drawing capital away from the U.S., whether it was significant fiscal reform in Germany or the developments of AI technologies among Chinese companies. As we see now, and you mentioned at the outset that the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ index were both up slightly last week, but it was the first time in 5 weeks. The prior 4 weeks, they had negative returns. So we're off a little bit of the lows. At this point in time, it feels like the equity markets, at least in the U.S., are more properly kind of calibrated or balanced after this correction between sort of revisions to growth and sort of the outlook overall. So it's pricing in maybe growth that won't be quite as strong as initially assumed at the start of the year, but certainly not recessionary. So if tariffs end up being aggressive or highly aggressive, if there's a bigger slowdown in growth, the markets, equity markets, are certainly not priced for that. If it turns out that the tariff news kind of plunk comes out along the lines of what we just discussed, maybe not as bad as feared, it also provides a potential near-term catalyst for equities to go higher, and that may already happen, based on the reporting of this being the case. But there is scope then for, if that turns out to the market gets ahead of itself, if the tariff situation is a little bit worse than is subsequently feared, there's kind of scope for downside. So, continued choppiness from these levels, I think, is reasonable. One thing that also helps from just in terms of hitting a bit of a near-term bottom is that investor positioning has cleaned up a lot. By a variety of metrics, institutional investors, in particular hedge funds, very systematic strategies, they've de-risked, quite a bit to the point where relative to kind of, long-term averages, they're below underweight risk versus, before they were kind of relatively aggressive on risk, particularly in the U.S. at the start of this year. So that means there's less selling that needs to be done, and there's also more essentially money that could be deployed to buy the markets to move higher. So I'd say I wouldn't conclude that the correction is absolutely over. We need to see clear policy pivots from the Trump administration in terms of putting the tariffs in place and then focusing on growth and enhancing policy measures. Having the Fed be willing to move forward with cutting rates and inflation not being as bad as feared, and actually seeing the growth data not just sort of perhaps stop declining, but also kind of inflecting a little bit higher, which could happen in the next few months, but doesn't appear to be imminent in the next couple of weeks. So I think for now, at least, it's a little bit of choppiness, but at least it feels like that there's some stability for the markets, at least until April 2nd.
Okay, so despite the stability in markets, we may not be out of the woods yet with respect to the correction. With that in mind, Jason, let's end on investor positioning. What should investors be doing right now?
Well, ultimately, we'd say to perhaps be selectively buying the dips in certain areas of the market that look attractive. Especially if they've been sitting on the sidelines or even kind of selling at this point in time. Within equities, overall, we maintain our view of upside for U.S. equities, and tech in the U.S. remains our preferred sector. know, tech has been one of the biggest underperformers this year. The Mag 7 has certainly significantly underperformed. But when we look at the underlying kind of fundamentals, the earnings potential, there's been no real sort of downgrade to the earnings outlook this year. It's just been sort of valuation compression or sort of derating. You compare that then with kind of the valuation, say, of Chinese internet companies. You know, that valuation gap that was pretty extreme 4 months ago, that's compressed, you know, quite significantly given how well those companies have performed versus how the Mag 7 have done. So we think on a global basis, a lot of the good news in these other markets, whether it's in Europe and Germany specifically, in China, those are priced in, whereas the U.S. markets are now sort of more maybe accurately pricing the underlying economic fundamentals, both the economy but also AI overall. So within the U.S., we still like U.S. equities. We still like the tech sector. We think this has a good kind of upside from current levels. We'd be cautious on, you know, jumping too far or too headlong into international markets, like in European markets or Chinese markets. You know, we do have selective ways in which we think that investors can play it, including like six ways to play Europe, which are going to be stocks or ideas that are less tariff-focused. We think there's been a little perhaps complacency in European equity markets, given them a string of good news, to maybe discounting the risk of, you know, the tariff story and how much that could impact, you know, negatively on growth. So be cautious on chasing that. And similarly with you know, kind of the Chinese internet stocks that have done quite well, because other parts of the Chinese economy, you know, aren't going to do as well as tariffs go into place. You know, the Chinese economy could actually slow. And that's you know, something to kind of keep in mind, is that's a big part of the Chinese equity market is, you know, is that part. If we pivot to fixed income, you know, as we see, if things turn out to be better on growth and fear, there's certainly a risk of rates backing up a little bit, which means, you know, we wouldn't recommend taking too much duration at this point in time. We continue to elect more of the intermediate part of the curve, like the 5 to 7 year, stay in high quality. You know, spreads have widened from fairly tight levels, and there's certainly a risk that if the growth uncertainty persists, they could widen even further. And only then will we think there'll be opportunities to buy in some of the riskier parts of credit, but just not yet. And then gold is something we continue to like. It's done very well. At this point in time, we think it more of a diversification, given also uncertainty in the global economy and geopolitics. It's done well adding that diversification, and we continue to think that it'll perform that role, at least in the near term, especially as the tariff details are rolled out and we understand exactly what are sort of the implications for the global economy once that happens.
Well, Jason, as always, a very helpful touch base to begin the trading week. Thank you for dropping by this morning to share with our listeners, our clients, your thoughts on recent developments across the Fed, the economy, and what's been moving markets. And of course, always appreciate the guidance when it comes to positioning. So thank you again, Jason, and do look forward to resuming with our conversation next week here in the studio.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.